stimulating talk. Time for thought-provoking conversation. Time for the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600. Turn on your brain and get the real scoop on today's topics and events. Here is Lisa Wexler.
Good morning. Lisa has the day off. I'm Ann Carrick, and in studio with me I have Bill Finch, former mayor of Bridgeport, but now in charge of the Discovery Museum. We're going to talk to him, obviously, in just a minute about all sorts of good things. Just want to give you a little preview. Later in the show today, we're going to talk about impeachment, not just the current news cycle, but what are the criteria to actually impeach somebody? And then, of course, the likelihood of that, as well as taking a look going forward as to the 2020 elections in Connecticut and maybe in general. And rounding out today's show, there's an NFL football players curling team that's coming to Bridgeport. And they're going to be here twice. So we're going to talk to Nutmeg Curling about what's going on with that. And I'll give you more information about what's the deal with the NFL football curling team, which doesn't sound quite normal. Tomorrow, I'm back again because Lisa has 2 days off. Lucky her. Happy New Year to her. We're going to take a look at climate change and the environment with a couple of experts who are scientists, not political people. And we're also going to look at alternative, integrative, naturopathic medicine and, you know, what's real and what's not. So that's just a little preview for tomorrow. But right now, Bill Finch is here. Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Oh, it's exciting to be back here.
Does it feel like old home week?
Yeah, really. And it's great to see you here, Ann. I know that you are a voice at Fox and on the weekends, and we're just happy that you're going to be doing something local here in Bridgeport where we could use your journalistic skills to help us.
It's nice to be here. And just only because I know that my other job can sound polarizing. I'm a news anchor. So just to clarify that, you know, a lot of what you hear sometimes is opinion and commentary. I keep that for here when I'm at WICC, but when I'm there, I'm just doing the news. So I just do straight up news, not my opinion or anybody else's as far as that goes. So I just like to clarify that because, you know, there's sort of, you know, the image and reputation precedes what I do, which sometimes skews what people think my job is.
We know you're not a puppet for Roger Ailes or anybody else. So.
I'm not a puppet for anybody.
That's right.
I have trouble being a puppet for myself. So, you know, obviously people in Bridgeport know you as the former mayor, but they should know that you are, you know, in charge or running or managing, however you want to put that, the Discovery Museum and, of course, the planetarium and the climbing center outside. There's a lot going on there at the Discovery Museum.
It is an exciting place to be, and especially, you know, to sort of talk about what's the relevance to my kids, right? You want your kids to grow up and have a better life, and one of the most important things we can give them is a good education. And so much of the educational experience in a traditional setting, you know, it can be tough for kids to sit still for a long period of time. But if you can put them in
adults.
I saw you climbing recently up at the Adventure Park.
Love the climbing.
Yeah.
It's my second time there, and it's probably the at least the fourth or fifth, maybe even more, sixth climbing type experiences I've had, if other places included. Yeah.
Well, with so much electronics around us and so many challenges in the public education sector, we're very excited to be an informal learning center where people can climb in the trees, they can blow stuff up, hopefully not at the same time, blast things off, build things, 3D print, learn about artificial intelligence, learn about nanotechnology, but then simple things like learning about balance and, you know, staying on the obstacles in the trees.
But hands-on.
It's all hands-on.
Yeah.
And we're really excited because we see kids transform right in front of our eyes. You know, when I was mayor, I never heard a kid yell out, "Mommy, look at me, I can do it. Daddy, let me show you." And I hear that all day long.
Absolutely.
At the museum. And every time that little light bulb goes on, that's another sort of step on the ladder for that child to become employed at some point in a STEM field. And specifically, Ann, we're a museum founded by women. We were founded by the Junior League of Fairfield County.
Women, I did not know that.
Well, women were excluded from the boardroom after World War II. And after World War II, we were going to rebuild Europe. We were going to go to outer space and search the oceans and solve diseases and everything else. And except if you're a woman, you couldn't do that.
Because you're supposed to stay home and raise the family.
Right. Make cookies, right? Was that what they said?
You know, while you're on that, I just have to say I've always found that we'll call it the old view of women, where a lot of times they were viewed as if they didn't weren't qualified to be in a business environment to make important decisions for the world, whatever. And at the same time, trusted with what you might consider to be some of the most important life-changing, life-altering decisions, which is raising the children and
teaching the children.
And teaching the children things, right? They were school teachers, so they taught the children. They were mothers, so they raised the children. And, oh, by the way, if they had the busy executive husband who was supposed to be the smart one bringing in all the money, the wife was usually left to shop for the new house when they had to move and make decisions. So they were making some of the biggest life decisions, and yet there was still this image that they weren't capable of important stuff.
And look what they did. I mean, whatever it was, pillow talk or whatever, within 10 years of founding the Discovery Museum, the building was up. They started in the North End Library in the basement in a little room called the Wonder Workshop. And as a, you know, an homage to them, we still call our little classroom next door to us. We have two classrooms next door and three in the main building. We still call that the Wonder Workshop because what these women did was amazing, right? They said, okay, how are we going to get our kids to do all these great things? Who's going to do the space exploration? Who's going to explore the oceans and cure disease? It's going to be people who are trained in the sciences, people who will have lifelong passionate careers, right? This is one of the things about Discovery Museum. It's this little engine right here in your community, and you can bring your kids there and set them off on a life of learning that's exciting and fun and hands-on.
Where they realize that it is fun and it is interesting. It's not just about a book and trying to remember what somebody's telling you in a classroom.
Yeah, exactly. So it's
I've always liked the Discovery Museum. You know, I don't think I ever went as a child. I only went as an adult. But the whole hands-on concept, you know, was much more fun to me.
Well, you know, that's what it's really all about. And on the 5th of October, people who are listening could come to our gala and help us raise money to make sure that we can reach more children and families. We do a lot in Bridgeport where the children have poorer social outcomes. You know, 10% of the STEM jobs right now, only 10, are filled by women. So if we did this on gender parity and said, well, you know, all jobs should be 50-50, right? Well, we don't. And if only 10% are STEM jobs, what does that mean? It means that we have a 40% brain drain in the United States of America. There's 40% of the astronauts and chemists and mathematicians that are not becoming who they were supposed to be because we still have built-in prejudices that are social pressures and whatnot. And when we do this, we make a concerted effort to go out. For example, we have a program in Bridgeport called Mighty STEM Girls. We bring in STEM professionals to come in after school as they're learning, as they're blowing stuff up and blasting things off and building things. We bring in women who are doing that as a real job so they can see people that look like
them. Where that goes in life if you pursue that, right?
Right.
So you're talking to somebody who's sort of an early STEM person because I majored in math, statistics, and computer science and took physics in high school because I thought it was interesting.
You have to come be one of our role models at Geraldine Johnson School or
You're preaching to the choir in this case because, you know, I was always interested in math and physics. But, you know, I used to joke that in my family it was kind of hard not to be because my mother, of course, in an era where women didn't even go to college sometimes, she went to college and studied math and physics.
Wow.
You know, my father was a mechanical engineer. My brother majored in marketing and physics, and I majored in math, statistics, and computer science. So if you didn't know math in my family, somebody was going to explain it to you one way or the other. I mean, you really couldn't escape it. So that's what I said. You know, I started in that field. And I can tell you, though, as a female, that I was often alone or, you know, one of few in a class that was a science, math, related class or a STEM, what they now refer to as STEM, but yes.
Considered yourself now recruited to our mission.
Okay. Let me know what I can do.
All right.
So I know that, you know, so you got a lot going on there. We talked about, so you're talking about all the benefits that the museum has as far as promoting STEM and women and everything, which, by the way, when I was there to climb, I noticed it was the Girl Scouts. They were there to preview the planetarium's new, is it exhibit or movie? I don't know what you refer to it as.
Well, thanks to the state of Connecticut and Senator Moore and Chris Rosario, the local delegation, and Governor Malloy, we were given a $1.8 million grant to upgrade our exhibits and our planetarium. So unbeknownst to many people in Bridgeport, NASA, where our tax dollars go, I like to point out the wonderful things our government does do, has basically photographed the known universe. And it's spatially aligned, and it's photographically accurate. So you create a fly-through space experience with the NASA database. So, for example, let's say David Mastry, our the head of the planetarium, our astrophysicist, is giving you, or Elliot Severin, or any of the lecturers there is telling you, well, here's the sky tonight. You're in a darkened planetarium. It's really a lot of fun, right?
Right.
Hold hands with your girlfriend or significant other, you know, and watch the stars. And so all of a sudden, he says, well, you know, there's Saturn. Let's go take a closer look at it. And you fly out to Saturn. You go through the rings, and it's all actual photographs and 3D representations that's projected on the screen above you. The only other place you'll be able to see this is in New York City at the American Museum of Natural History and the Discovery Museum in Bridgeport.
Okay. That's so for people who have not been to either of those, you know, when you're talking, it reminds me of some of, a little plug for Disney, from some of the Disney events though, where they have like the surround movies where you feel like you're flying in the plane over whatever they're showing you. So a similar type event, but in this case, space.
It's right here.
But that's what I'm saying. But so it's that same idea, though, where you, it's as if you're flying through
immersive space.
Yes, but you don't have to go anywhere but Bridgeport to see it.
4450 Park Avenue in Bridgeport, Connecticut, across the street from Sacred Heart University, the Fairchild Wheeler Golf Course, the Disc Golf Course in Veterans Park, the Adventure Park at Discovery. There's so much fun, so many fun things to do on our little campus. And we also have our Discovery Magnet, Interdistrict Science Magnet School.
How long has that been there? I know it's new-ish, but how long has it been there?
Well, I happen to have inside information because we built it when I was mayor. And, you know, again, you have to fight for these things because no matter what you do, it's always fought, right? There's always NIMBY somewhere. So we had a fight to get the Adventure Park in, and now that helps support the museum through its revenues.
Okay.
And we had fought to actually get the Discovery Magnet in, and we won, and we got that in. And Discovery Magnet's been around for about 8 years, nine years now. And it's several school sending districts. So it's like five or six towns send their kids, you know, Stratford, Fairfield, Bridgeport, Trumbull.
Oh, that's kind of, I didn't realize
Monroe.
That either. So it's a mix of different towns.
It's a mix.
That's kind of nice because it gives the like a different flavor to the whole student body to have people from all around.
Well, unfortunately, Connecticut has highly segregated school systems, some of the most segregated in the country. And to try to...
Not intentionally.
Well, our zoning makes it happen.
Well, okay. But I'm just saying it's
I believe it's intentional.
Okay.
It you know, nobody sits around and says, let's racially segregate. But when you say, let's not racially segregate, oh, no, we can't possibly do that. So, I think we've got a big challenge on racial integration in Connecticut. And the cities bear the brunt for that because our systems tend to be racially isolated and underfunded. But what we do...
That's usually what I think of as the biggest problem is that if you have an area that's predominantly lower wealth, then the school is underfunded because
there's not as much
the wealth comes from the surrounding area. And if there's no money in the surrounding area, then the school doesn't get much money either. But that's a topic for another conversation. We don't have time for that today and the museum.
So many days, so many issues, you know, so many places to go.
Right.
But yeah, so the inter-district magnets were an attempt to integrate as well as to provide, you know, social opportunities. And
I'm imagining that the museum does a lot of work with that school since it's right next door.
Well, you know, I really didn't know how smart we were back at the time when we said that we wanted to have the Discovery Magnet at the Discovery Museum.
What a concept, yes.
Well, I was fought by the educators locally and I lost, but I won the battle, lost the war. I wanted to have it an extension of the building. I wanted it to share a wall and actually be physically connected. So a teacher could immediately say, well, I've got an exhibit down the hall. I want to go
Let's
show
go.
It.
Yeah.
Let's go. Educators fought that. I had a little bit of a touchy.
Could you build a covered walkway? I mean, they're really close.
But here's how we could. But here, well, they might have fought that. I don't know. But anyway, we were able to get it about 100 feet away. And NASA heard about it. And NASA's given us $500,000 over 5 years. We're in our last year now, and we're looking for a new way to present this. But it's called Discover NASA. And the kids at the Discovery Magnet School, from kindergarten through eighth grade, have Discovery scientists going over from the museum to teach rocket science.
Nice.
So kindergartners have 8 years now. This is the first year, so it's 8 years, where every kid from kindergarten. So this class I just spoke to was the first one that went all the way through the school that I helped to build. And it was an exciting moment for me. And I had kids come up to me after I spoke at their graduation and say, oh, Mayor Finch, we understand all that. That's just like rocket science. That's simple.
As opposed to the people who use that as, you know, it's not rocket science, meaning rocket science is difficult, right?
And people who doubt that this has an impact, at our gala
last
year.
Need to go talk to those students. But yes, what were you going to say? Go ahead.
You're absolutely right. Talk to any of the young kids that go through this immersive, hands-on kind of experience, right? So we had Kathleen O'Brady, who came back and spoke at our gala last year. And she stood at the podium as a woman who basically tells Richard Branson, Elon Musk, and Boeing, whether their rockets can go up or not, whether they're certified under NASA regulations are as, you know,
right,
flight-worthy. She's one of the gatekeepers. She is an incredibly brilliant, acclaimed engineer at NASA, and she says, the reason I am is because I went to planetarium shows when I was in the Young Astronauts Program in Norwalk School System. I came to planetarium shows and saw what I could be doing, and then went on a Challenger mission, which is a make-believe, immersive, simulated mission to Mars that we have. And many of the local school children have gone through planetarium shows and Challenger learning exhibits, and when they do, it changes their life.
Yeah.
And we have living, breathing proof of this, especially for us. It was exciting to have a woman come back and say, as a little girl, this changed my life, and you should do more of this.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break here on WACC 600. This is Ann Carrick in for Lisa Wexler. And we're talking to Bill Finch from the Discovery Museum. Don't go away. We'll come right back, talk more. And, of course, you can always join the show, 203-333-9422.
You've read and heard from all the others. Now the real story on today's biggest topics. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
Welcome back to the show. Ann Carrick in for Lisa, who's enjoying a couple days off. Bill Finch is in the studio with us from the Discovery Museum. And Bill, I know tomorrow is a big day for NASA.
Well, they're going to be celebrating October 1st, 1959 was their founding day. So 60 years of NASA, and NASA has brought us to the moon, and now they're going to the moon and beyond to Mars. And you can actually relive some of that and take simulated missions to Mars at the Discovery Challenger Center, which is affiliated with NASA and the Challenger Learning Centers.
There's so much going on there. I feel like I could spend a month at the Discovery Museum, especially if you let me go out and climb periodically to, you know, blow off steam and not see it all.
Well, the great thing about the Adventure Park, in my way of thinking, is that, you know, why do you have a science museum? You're really trying to figure out your place in the universe. Where does mankind fit in? You know, where are we? We're on this little blue marble, this tiny, fragile spaceship floating through nothingness, in vast nothingness that we can't even comprehend. And the only way we can sort of get our minds around it is to try to study science. And when you come to the science museum, when you come to a planetarium show, you realize how important our planet is and how fragile it is. And one of the things that makes me feel so good about my service to Discovery Museum and what it means is that we can help to educate people that the planet is very fragile, that we must really be in touch with nature and its systems so that we don't put them so far out of whack that it will make the planet uninhabitable for humans, which we are very much in line to do without really strong and quick action to reverse climate change.
And that's what we're talking about tomorrow on the show. I have two scientists who are going to be here to talk about, you know, what's real, what's not, you know, the timing, you know, what effect do people have and what effect can people have to change things. So that's all teed up for tomorrow. So thanks for that.
Well, tune in you know, there's really, you know, we talk about elections and issues and presidents and their tweets and all that other stuff.
Well, we're going to try to avoid the political aspects of it tomorrow and just focus on the real stuff so that people, because I think that's one of the things is people are everywhere as far as the reaction from, you know, it's all just a bunch of hooey that people are talking about and, you know, the world is coming to an end and everything in between, because it's very hard for the average person, you know, to kind of disseminate all the things they hear and what's real and what's just political banter and grandstanding. And so that's why I have people coming on who I hope they got the message when we booked it. You know, I talked to them that this isn't really about politics. This is about, I want to talk about what's really happening, what's causing which thing, you know, like cause and effect, what's causing what. So people can sort of feel like they understand what's really going on. And then they can take their own political bias and run with it if they want. But to try to get to the real information, because in all topics, there's a lot of misinformation that sometimes overcrowds the real information.
Well, I would counter that only a little bit to tell you that the moneyed interests are the ones that are clouding it. It's not the scientific community. The scientific community has been highly unified behind the fact that this is an existential threat to humanity. There isn't any doubt within credible scientific community. Well over 95% of scientists that are involved with climate
And as you know, though, as soon as you start to talk about science, there's a lot of people who just think in their own mind, that's beyond my comprehension. Like, you know, I find that confusing. And they sort of just tune it out and they listen to somebody who's talking about, you know, they probably get the political version instead, which sometimes is in plain English that doesn't talk so much about science. Because there are still a lot of people who just think science, oh, like, I don't get it, and they just don't listen because they feel like they don't understand.
To come to the Discovery Museum.
So visit the Discovery Museum and then tune in tomorrow.
Make things simple. Just put your hand on the other side of a glass window and you'll feel the greenhouse effect.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, if you come to a planetarium show and you'll see the planets, and the three planets in the Goldilocks zone, right? We have the first planet is Mercury, then you have Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars. So Venus, Earth, and Mars are in the Goldilocks zone, where the sunlight creates enough energy to allow life to exist, a temperature within which the narrow band that life can exist.
Right.
It doesn't exist in very many places within the billions of universes.
So, hence the Goldilocks, galaxies. The just right zone, yes.
Right. Now, Saturn was a twin to Earth, and probably, some people think, could have had life on it in the past, but its greenhouse gas became out of control. Sequestering of greenhouse gases, carbon cycle became out of control for some reason which we don't know, which is a reason to study the planets and to find out,
right,
you know, where we are and how fragile our planet really is. So if Earth were to become more like Venus, which is 850 degrees instead of 65 degrees, you could see how just putting your hand on the other side of a glass and saying, if I make that hotter, that's not good for my life because
right.
It's going to just burn my hand, and then it could make the planet. And so when people start to try to confuse very simple issues, you've got to look at why they're doing it. And for the most part, it's over money. And the fossil fuel industries paid lots and lots of money, like the cigarette industry is, to confuse people.
Well, and that's true with almost any issue you choose. You know what I'm saying?
These other issues except nuclear war are existential threats to our species.
Well, but there
that's
are,
why this one is so
there
passionate.
Are, there are some things, for example, in the medical industry where they have the same kind of problems. So it may not be a threat to the world as a whole, but to individuals, and you're talking about their health,
sure. Yeah.
It certainly is. So but that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of times where
I stand corrected on that, because I think, you know, genetic... you know, manipulating the human genome is another thing that could be an existential threat at some point.
Right. But even, I'm going to pick on the pharmaceutical companies for a minute. They're not all bad. But you know, they have a lot of money, and they're trying to, their business is to sell the drugs they make. And sometimes in doing that, they're putting their money towards solutions
right.
to existing problems, maybe instead of towards prevention of those same problems. I'm just talking
right.
in a general sense.
No,
so there's things like that which are also a big threat. If they were putting the same amount of money, I don't mean just the pharmaceuticals, but in general, if the same amount of money was going towards how to prevent something as goes towards treating that something, we might not even have that anymore. And instead, the money is in the treatment, not in the prevention.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think bring it back to topic here of the Discovery Museum, truly, what we want you to do is to come here and be a science savvy citizen. We want you to, when you vote or when you purchase goods,
science warriors.
Yeah. We want you to be empowered with the knowledge that you need to make an informed decision. And unfortunately, in the United States, we haven't spent enough on educating people. And one of the things that's exciting about having a science museum is it's an engine of ingenuity. It's an engine of discovery. It's an engine of, where do I fit in the universe, and how do I make sure that my planet stays healthy for all of us, whether it has to do with, you know, pharmacology or physics or medicine or any of the sciences that we try to expose people to, nanotechnology. And every time we evolve as a species with more and more understanding and more technology, as you rightly point out, there are downsides and upsides. But who's going to make that decision? In a democracy, it's our elected officials. If they're paid by large corporate interests, then they're probably not going to make as good a decision
right.
as if they're listening to informed, science-savvy citizens who went to the Discovery Museum.
Right. I'm all behind science-savvy people. So, all right. So, Bill, thank you for being here. Again, Bill Finch, Discovery Museum, and it's discoverymuseum.org. If somebody is looking for general information.
And our gala is next Saturday night at 6 o'clock, October 5th.
Okay.
We'd love to see people.
Tickets available?
Write a $125 check to promote science-savvy citizens and, what do you call them, science warriors?
Science warriors.
And math majors and that they'll now become prominent radio and TV personalities.
Okay, exactly. But you know what? You need science people in the broadcasting field because, you know, I was saying to somebody the other day, and now I'm getting off topic, but... Yeah, that sometimes I feel like I'm no longer the expert at one thing, but I know a lot. I know, you know, a fair amount about a lot of things. I said, which is kind of what you need when you work in the news, because my job is to collect all the information about something, try to whittle it down into a short amount of time, and then tell everybody in plain language so that anyone can understand it, whether that's your area of expertise or not. So maybe that's my area of expertise, is simplifying complicated things so that people know what we're talking about.
Sounds like politicians. Good ones.
Except I don't have an agenda. I'm just trying to get the information out there. I want you to draw your own conclusion. I want to give you the information and then let you figure it out. I'll give you an opinion if I, you know, but I usually make it very clear, like, my opinion, so that it differentiates from this is the, here are the facts and here's the news versus this is what I think personally. Because, of course, I have an opinion on everything. As we all should. All right, Bill, thank you again. We're going to take a quick break here. WICC 600, you're quite welcome. And we'll be back, and we're going to switch topics and talk about impeachment, which, unless you've been under a rock, has been the topic in the news all weekend.
On air, WICC 600. Online, WICC600.com. Let's stimulate your brain with the Lisa Wexler Show.
Welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. Ann Carrick in here today, and we're going to change direction on topics a little bit. Joining me now is Dr. Ed Lynch, who's the professor and chair at Hollins University. And Ed, first of all, good morning, and thanks for being here with us.
Good morning, Ann. Good to talk to you again. Thanks for inviting me.
Always like to have you on. I know it's been a while. As I was saying going into the break, that unless you've been under a rock, the news cycle this weekend was pretty much all about impeachment and whistleblowing and Ukraine and so on. And before we get to that aspect of it, I asked you to be here because I thought it would be helpful for people to have a little bit better understanding of the impeachment process and the criteria. Sure. And some of that aspect of it, you know, because, of course, what you hear mostly is the different politicians and their view on what happened and what should happen and who's guilty of what and who they want to talk to and who should testify and on and on. And it gets, and so people get very tangled up in that aspect of it. So I'm like, let's take three steps back and talk about impeachment, how about 10 steps back? Was that better? and talk about impeachment, you know, What would actually, in a general sense, not this specific scenario that's been in the news, but in a general sense, what is it that would warrant impeachment? I mean, impeachment inquiry is only looking into whether it's warranted. So, but right. What would actually say, oh, that's impeachable?
What the founders had in mind when they wrote the impeachment language into the U.S. Constitution was a way of protecting the country from a president who was basically tearing up that Constitution, acting in an unconstitutional sort of way. And it's that sort of thing that led to the first impeachment. The first impeachment was Andrew Johnson right after the Civil War. And the offense that he was being impeached for was firing cabinet members, which we take for granted, but which the Senate at the time insisted, since you need our approval to hire a cabinet member, you need us to confirm them, you need us to fire them as well, you're acting in an unconstitutional sort of manner. Same thing with Richard Nixon. Whether or not the charges against Bill Clinton rose to that level, well, most people think that they didn't, and that's one of the reasons that impeachment process never had much of a chance. But here's how the process goes.
A quick thing for Richard Nixon, because a lot of people may not have been old enough to remember that, or they were alive but don't really. They were too young to really be following the details. What were the actual charges? I mean, everybody knows about the tapes and all this other stuff, but what was the part that actually fell into the impeachment category?
The impeachment charge against Richard Nixon was that he was using the power of the presidency to interfere with investigations into criminal activity. That was the actual offense for which Richard Nixon would have been impeached had he not resigned. But again,
so interfering with the investigation of criminal activity.
That's right.
Okay.
So what's going to happen at this point now in 2019, possibly going into 2020, we'll see, but is that Congress will undertake this inquiry. And Nancy Pelosi just was quoted over the weekend as saying, I have no idea how long this will take. Now, which is interesting because as of Friday of last week, the idea was that there would be very few hearings and that the articles of impeachment would be developed very quickly. Now she seems to be tapping on the brake a little bit on that. But the committee, the Judiciary Committee in the House, will develop and eventually vote on articles of impeachment. These are like criminal indictments. So these are charges that will be leveled against the president, and then they'll vote on them as a committee, and then they go to the full House. The House will debate them and discuss them and then vote on the articles. If the House votes even a single article of impeachment against President Trump, then the Senate is obligated under the Constitution to hold a trial. It does not have to be a lengthy trial. It does not have to be a trial in which there are scads of witnesses, but they are required to hold a trial. It is presided over by the Chief Justice of the United States, John Roberts, and eventually the Senate will take a vote. It takes a two-thirds vote, 67 senators, to remove a president.
I would say the likelihood of that with almost anybody is slim, because that requires an awful lot of people thinking the same thing, which doesn't happen so much in Washington.
Exactly. There are a couple of things going on here. Number one, the Democrats do not have the majority in the Senate, which means that they will essentially not be in control of this trial. Now, when President Clinton was impeached back in the 1990s, the Republicans had control of the Senate, and so they had control of, you know, who testified in what order and all this sort of thing, which the Democrats who want to impeach President Trump aren't going to have.
What were the actual charges for?
Then you need 19 Republican senators to vote for removing the president, assuming you get all the Democrats.
Yeah. I was going to say, with Clinton, what were the actual charges that were considered to possibly to be impeachable, as opposed to all the things that everybody thought he did wrong?
Okay. Well, the House Judiciary Committee back in 1998 approved four articles, two of which were approved by the full House, and one of them I know was perjury.
Okay.
And I actually can't remember the other one right offhand.
That's right. I was just sort of curious because, again, because it's politics, you always end up with, there's all this information about what people think about something, but the actual charges are very specific.
That's right.
And often get lost in the shuffle of the conversation about everybody's opinion on the topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you raise a very important point there. And the founders were entirely cognizant of this. They knew it would be going this way when they wrote the Constitution. Impeachment is a political proceeding masquerading as a legal proceeding. It really has everything to do with politics, and certainly it did against Andrew Johnson, against Richard Nixon, against Bill Clinton, and against Donald Trump. And I think the Clinton example is probably the most apropos, because it was in Clinton's second term, and Republicans were despairing of ever getting rid of this guy, short of waiting out his second term. It could be coincidental, but it is worth pointing out that the polls were shifting in Trump's favor for 2020 at the very time that this scandal emerged and the Democrats started talking about impeachment.
I feel like in politics, a lot of times people, like politicians will bring up charges or accuse people of things just to give themselves more publicity and airtime. And I know that's one of the arguments people are making at the moment, which is this is all a waste of time because it's never going to get past the Senate. So it's all just in an effort to try to, make somebody look bad in public. It's not really about trying to get Trump removed from office.
Well, I think it's both and, not either or. I am certain that there are Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives who are genuinely scandalized by Donald Trump as president, who opposed him since he was elected in November of 2016. There are, no doubt, are some who genuinely believe that this current Ukraine matter is worthy of impeachment. But I think you're right. I think there are others for whom this is a great chance to get on television. It's a great chance to present themselves in a certain way to the American people as upholding justice and the American way or whatever it is. And I, you know, the bottom line is that until you start seeing some major cracks in the Republican side, with over a dozen of them saying they would vote for impeachment or vote for removal, and very few of them are going to say that till they see charges. So, you know, I think there are basically two kinds of scandals. There are scandals that involve the entire nation, and Watergate was one of those, because interfering with an FBI investigation, this was something everyone could instantly understand.
Right.
Nobody trusted Richard Nixon to start with. It was what I might call a national or a Main Street scandal. Then there are Washington scandals. And Washington scandals, that's Bill Clinton. What happened in Washington, the affair with Monica Lewinsky, lying about it afterwards, everybody in Washington was concerned about this. Very few people outside of Washington, other than, you know, laughing at the whole thing,
right,
were talking about it.
I remember my opinion on that was just, what a colossal bad choice, like poor judgment, kind of, you know, like, what, I mean, I didn't really feel like it was a security threat to the country, but I thought, you know, like, come on, you're the president, like, really, you didn't know that this was a bad idea?
Well, yeah, and you can certainly raise some ethical issues when one of their trysts occurred on Easter Sunday with his wife and daughter upstairs in the family quarters. I mean, that's tawdry, it's nasty.
It's great for a TV movie, but...
Right.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Well, no, but I mean, it sounds like the plot of a movie. But yeah.
But when the Ukrainian president himself has said, as he said on a couple of occasions, I certainly didn't think there was any pressure, when we've got three Democrat senators who themselves sent a letter to the president of Ukraine, asking the president of Ukraine to investigate Donald Trump, I see this as something that's going to be all over cable news, but not something that's going to be a lot of dinner time conversations, not going forward. Maybe, you know, for the next couple of weeks, sure.
Yeah.
But not 2 months from now.
I don't see a lot of people sitting around dinner discussing whether they think the phone call between Donald Trump and the leader of Ukraine, you know, when he's at, is he asking them to investigate, you know, Hunter Biden so that he can have dirt on Joe Biden as a possible 2020 opponent? Or does he think that Vice President Joe Biden asked for an investigation or helped to have the prosecutor removed who was investigating the company that his son worked for?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are probably already like sitting there saying, what? Like, who is investigating what about what? Like, and it's Ukraine. Like, do we even care? I mean... So I think you're right. That dinner conversation, you know, the whole thing has become sort of difficult to explain. And as someone who spent all weekend at work doing the news, trying to explain it in clear, simple language, I can tell you it is not easy to explain what, you know, what happened and this, you know, what one side thinks happened and what the other side thinks happened, because you have the administration saying, no, we were asking them to look into Joe Biden, vice president at the time, Biden's request to have the prosecutor removed from Ukraine who was investigating the company where his son worked. That's one version. And then
right.
The other one is, no, the president was asking Ukraine to investigate the Biden family so that he could use that against the candidate for 2020, Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was only a few people on the call. The transcript is now out, you know, and like
right.
You said, the officials in Ukraine are saying, no, we didn't feel pressure. You know, the opponents of the administration are saying he's pressuring them. He's withholding financial money, which he's now about to sign legislation. So they're getting that military aid to prevent them from having a government shutdown. Yeah, you know, but there's just so many pieces to it. And I would imagine there's at least three people listening right now saying, I have no idea what she's talking about.
And I think, yeah, that's certainly part of it. And you also have to find an actual crime.
Yes, details there. Yeah, you have to have a crime to charge somebody, yeah. Right.
Advising an ally, and Ukraine is an ally of the United States, advising an ally that there could be criminal activity going on in his country is not a crime. For the president to put a hold on foreign aid is not a crime. That discretion is given to the president. Nor are there a lot of criteria on the basis for which he can withhold aid. Moreover, once this story got out and President Trump met with the Ukrainian president at the United Nations, the Ukrainian president could have said pretty much anything and been assured at this point he's going to get the aid.
Right.
He could have said, you know, this was awful, this was a shakedown, and it, you know.
But politicians are never going to say that.
I understand people reading the transcript. But I wonder how many people in Washington who read the transcript of this phone call between two world leaders have ever read another transcript of a phone call between two world leaders.
To know what's normal and what's not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In my job as a college professor, I've read hundreds.
Yeah. All right. And I'm going to have you hold on for a minute. We need to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk to you before we go to the news. But I hope you're staying with us after the news because we have a lot more to talk about. So a quick break here at WICC 600. We'll be back to talk more with Professor Dr. Ed Lynch about impeachment and what's going on with the 2020 election. Don't go away.
Stimulation for your brain. This is the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600.
And Lisa has the day off. I'm Ann Carrick. We're talking to Ed Lynch, who is a professor and chair at Hollins University in Virginia. And we've been talking about impeachment in general. We have a few minutes here before we check in on the news. So, Ed, what are the other things people need to know about impeachment in general? And then after the news, we'll talk a little bit about the current situation more specifically.
Well, impeachment is a very serious matter. And I think one of the ways in which your listeners and other Americans who aren't part of the Washington scene need to look at this is asking themselves, do the players involved in this seem to be taking it seriously? Is it a serious matter involving serious constitutional questions? Or is this a way of getting at a political enemy whom you can't get at some other way? And I, you know, that was an appropriate question when the Democrat Bill Clinton was being impeached. It's a legitimate question now when a Republican president is being impeached.
Weren't there people
There's been talk of impeachment of every president since Eisenhower.
Well, I was just going to say, when Obama was president, I think there were people who wanted to impeach him for something just because they didn't like him, they wanted him out.
Right. And Ronald Reagan with Iran-Contra, maybe George H.W. Bush. Maybe nobody wanted to impeach him in his 4 years, but
he flew under the radar, apparently. Yeah.
I remember it coming up with pretty much every other president. George W. Bush because of Florida, you know. And the other matter that I don't think gets discussed enough and seems to surprise some people. The Democrats and others, including many Republicans who don't like Donald Trump, I don't think they're going to like President Pence any better. If anything, he's more conservative than Donald Trump is, and he's the next in line.
I've said that to people who, you know, who are just so unhappy with Donald Trump. And I said, remember, let's say you removed Donald Trump. Now you have President Pence. And their eyes roll up like, oh, I'm like, well, but that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you hate Donald Trump, just keep in mind what you get if you remove him. Is that better or worse, depending on your view of the situation? There's a lot of people who don't like Donald Trump's personality, behavior, et cetera, mm-hmm. which, you know, if you're in the greater New York area, you probably already knew, like, that is Donald Trump. And whether he's businessman Donald Trump or TV star Donald Trump or President Donald Trump, that is Donald Trump. And so, you know, you're going to have to, you're going to kind of have to just get past that part because that is who he is. He always has been. He's not going to change his personality or the way he speaks or the sound of his voice or any of that. You know, it's just that now he has a much higher podium to speak from. And so everybody hears him.
That's right. And if he is removed, which I think is extremely unlikely, President Pence would have a much more united Republican Party behind him, and generally it's not going to work. Now, of course, Democrats will take that point and say, you see, we're not doing this for political reasons. And in some cases, I'm sure they're not doing it for political reasons. But the politics of this, it's really hard to see it working in their favor, except in one way. Let me squeeze this in before the news.
Okay.
If they believe, if the Democrats think that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to retire soon, and they want to be able to say a president facing impeachment shouldn't be able to make a Supreme Court pick, then it works for them politically. But that's basically the only way I see this working out for them politically.
You think that's their only play, so to speak?
I think that's the only way this really works for them, is if they can use it to delay a Supreme Court appointment until after 2020.
All right. And on that note, we're going to go to the news here at WIC 600. After the news, we'll come back with more with Professor Lynch. And we also have somebody on the phone who has a comment and question. And you can join the conversation, 203-333-9422. It's time for the news.